From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we move on through the summer and very close to the opening of our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. With that in mind, we are going to Elk Grove, and we're joined by Marcy Green, the principal of our great St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School in Elk Grove. Marcy, good day to you.
Good day. Thank you so much. It's always a privilege to be able to be on with you.
Oh, it's an honor to have you.
Thank you.
It's a joy. I love talking with you, Marcy. Tell us, it's a brave new world out there, and you guys are going boldly into the future here.
Yes. Not going to try to sugarcoat it. It is really difficult. I just got out of a three-hour meeting with my teachers who were here. We were masked. We were sitting in a room, just really making sure that we all are feeling comfortable with what's going to happen moving forward and with all not only procedures for them as a staff to keep them safe and to keep the kids safe from their activities, but also to keep our kids safe once they're here, and just really going over everything with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that we feel comfortable. It's gonna be, I think, a little easier once we're here and we see, you know, what we might be missing, but we're trying as hard as we can not to be missing anything so that we have everything in place when the kids get here.
Yeah, you know, it's different, you know, every school year, or I would presume, and this goes for a lot of occupations, you build on what you've learned before and you make tweaks or maybe even major changes depending on something that didn't work or something that will work better the other way. This is the unknown. You don't have something to base it on.
Well, it really is, and I think the uncertainty that that parents are hearing out in the media, nobody really knows for sure, so they're not sure how they feel. We have a large group of parents that know that education is what they want for their children. They feel comfortable with the safeguards that we have put in place, and they're ready. And then we have a whole group of parents that they're just not sure. And so what we're struggling with right now is how do we honor both of those groups? Because our teachers don't have enough man hours, and we don't have enough space to accommodate both of those groups. But we want to be able to make sure that we are providing the education for all of our students. And when I say that, I feel like education is something that I'm so passionate about, that it's something that our children need. You know, it's what helps them to grow and develop into being responsible citizens and having what they need to make responsible choices. And I think for the social and emotional welfare of the kids, this environment has proven. We opened our preschool and our summer school on June 9th, and we've had kids here for kinder readiness in a very safe environment. Parents have been overwhelmingly happy about their kids being getting back to somewhat normalcy. You know, it's given us a chance to put our protocols in place and with a small group before all of a sudden we have 400 kids here and a staff of 50.
I mean, I look at my own family and we have, you know, four teenagers and my wife and I, and we've got six different opinions about it. You know,
exactly.
It's six different, and somebody's a little bit worried about this. Somebody's not worried about that, but they're a little worried about this. And then same thing. I look at just a couple of days ago where in the public arena, L.A. County Schools and San Diego County Schools announced jointly that they were going to, for the time being, not for the whole year necessarily, just they're going to start out online. And right between those two areas, Orange County announced they were going back to in-person, 5 days a week, no masks, no social distancing. And I'm going, wow.
No.
You know, it's like, wow. And then another district in Northern California is saying, we're going to put everything off for 2 weeks. We're going to start 2 weeks late, you know, just to give us more time, you know, and So you're seeing all these different reactions within one. To me, it was just stunning that L.A. said this, San Diego said this, and Orange between them said something completely the opposite. You know, they all touch each other. You know,
right?
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I've had emails back from we have parents who are practice internal medicine. Mm-hmm. And they feel very comfortable with sending their kids back. We have teachers who are immune compromised, and they've talked with their doctors, and their doctors say it's okay for you to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're hearing is you have to keep these safeguards in place. And the rule of thumb is these three. Number one, the kids have their own personal items. They have their own personal space. So though we know it's great for kids to work in groups and tables, we've put desks separated in every classroom.
Mm-hmm.
We just spent quite a bit of time talking about what supplies were going to be needed so that the kids have their own things right at their desk.
Right.
And making sure that we've informed parents about that. So that's one. Learning tools, all of those things that teachers are creating right now so that kids have their own when they come in and they're not sharing. That if you cannot keep a 6-foot social distance, that they're wearing their masks. So our kids will be wearing, we decided today for sure that everybody will be wearing masks in class. Teachers will be wearing face shields as they teach to the class from the front, so as a whole group. But once they become proximal to the children, they will put their masks, their mouth and nose masks on to be able to work with them more individually or, you know, within the group of kids. So that's number two. And then number three is proper hygiene.
Sure.
So a big part of what we talked about today was coming from a teaching perspective, you can't do something that someone else tells you to do within your school, the way you run your classroom. It has to be something that feels comfortable to you. So knowing that we have to put into place proper hand washing and cleaning and those kind of things, how are you going to do it as a teacher that makes sense to you, that feels comfortable in your schedule, and then how are you communicating that, how that's going to happen to parents?
You know, I know within my own family, the one thing that we all agreed on, and it's what you touched on at the start, is that being back in school in person 5 days a week with everything, all our activities, is the ideal. There was no disagreement on that. Nobody was saying, I'd prefer online or, there's so much, obviously, just to instruction being better in person, but all the other parts of growing
up,
you know, people talk about athletics, but it's athletics and the drama club and student government and yearbook and on. I can guarantee if every school dropped athletics and the band and school plays and everything, they just dropped it for whatever reason. We don't offer that anymore. We're just offering the 3 R's, you know. You'd have a lot of kids drop out of high school.
Where's the fun? Where's the social interaction?
Yeah, and sometimes it's just a matter of, I know how to play the trombone, mm-hmm. and I'm in the band. I can't leave school. Or I'm on the football team, or mm-hmm. I'm in the choir. Those things that are so important to a kid that keeps them connected.
Yep. And so, you know, I have said from the start that if there are children who live in homes where there's someone who's immune compromised or they are immune compromised, we have a teacher who is going to be facilitating their learning,
mm-hmm.
So that they can stay at home. It's not something that I'm hoping that everyone's going to do, because what we've found with those families who have come on campus and seen what it looks like, they feel a lot more comfortable mm-hmm. about what we're doing. No visitors on campus at all, so it's only those kids, and we're keeping them within their cohorts of their class so that we can contain any spread.
Wow. So the one question I have now, when our kids were much littler and you always mm-hmm. you always packed their lunch,
right.
Now that they're teenagers, you know, they, oh, well, one's a vegan and one's this, and they want to do their own things, you know. I was, for some reason, I guess just because I really loved to do it, I was the guy who got to make four lunches. The night before, I'd make four lunches for the four kids. And my goal was to pack a good enough lunch that they could trade it for something they really wanted.
Yep, not going to happen.
Now, so my question is, can you do
that?
You probably can't trade lunches.
Well, the interesting part was I just put out, so starting on Monday, I'm putting out, because when you put it, we have a safety plan, and that safety plan is over 20 pages, a lot of information. Parents like things in small chunks. And plus, not only is the safety plan in place, there's a lot of other ancillary things that are changing somewhat in order to keep kids safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, Monday night I talked about drop-off and taking the kids' temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Drop-off is completely changing, and we've never taken temperatures of kids before.
Right.
Last night I talked about school supplies and masks. And so... Now I forgot where I was going with that, but it's just, you know, the lunches was what you asked about.
Yep.
We have, so last night part of that was the supplies, and what we've asked is that the kids don't bring that big, huge backpack to school with
sure.
all the things that they don't need.
Right.
Because they're bringing with that just a lot of other, you know, the germs that go along
sure.
with that, right? So, so the teachers have asked that the kids just bring their knapsack, you know, the mm-hmm. string tied, that they can keep on their chair so that the backpacks aren't touching each other, that the kids don't have to congregate in a place where backpacks are kept. And in that knapsack, they will have a bagged lunch so that lunch can be thrown away at the
mm-hmm.
end of lunch. They will be eating in their classrooms at their desks, and then we have designated areas. Thankfully, we have four designated areas that they can play in outside, so
mm-hmm.
they can keep within their class as they go outside and play in their designated areas, which will be then rotated, so they have a difference throughout the school week. And then, you know, we're limiting them having to bring back and forth books. We're limiting them having to bring back and forth supplies. All the supplies will live at school. For the most part, they won't be bringing books back and forth. I'll just go back to that simple, you know, I think about, you know, when you think about kids walking to school with their book and their slate, and it's, you know, tied with with something, and that's all they take back and forth to school, you know,
right.
You know, the old-fashioned movies.
Yep.
And so that's what we're thinking, like, how simplistic can we make this and still ensure that the kids have what they need when they get to school and have what they need when they come home. And so that's, I don't think that's a bad thing, that we've gone back to simplicity, but we want to make sure that the kids aren't compromised in any way when we do that, so, educationally or safety. So.
We're talking with Marcy Green, the principal at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton School in Elk Grove. Marcy, what's your biggest question mark going and heading into the school year?
Biggest question mark is I can't change the way people think.
Mm-hmm.
But question mark is who needs something from me that I haven't been able to communicate
right.
to them, because things are so different. You know, I don't know if we're going to have to quarantine and do distance learning again, but we're prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we've prepared every student individually for that. So, we don't have an unknown. Tomorrow could look completely different than today.
Well, we're seeing that almost every day. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
something
yep.
new. Somebody announces something. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We have a daughter starting at community college. And was just devastated when they announced a couple of months ago that they were going to online only in the fall. You know, and she was so looking forward to just getting out of the house a little bit and being in college. And, you know, and just really was, it was really hard for her. And she's fine. But, you know, it was her little stroke of independence that was robbed for her before she even got on campus, you know. And so things changed quickly. Is there a tipping point? Is there, you know, you show up one day and you get four kids have it or a teacher has it? What?
Oh, absolutely. There's a protocol in place for, like, the kids obviously don't come in the classroom if they even have a fever.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go home. And then if they go home, their family goes home.
Mm-hmm.
If
like siblings.
Exactly.
Okay.
All siblings.
Mm-hmm.
If a student comes down with it in the classroom, you know, that classroom completely goes out on distance learning, or possibly the school goes out on distance learning for 2 weeks. And we're calling that quarantine distance learning right now because we are going to have those kids that can't come that are still going to be part of our day that are distance learning with one of our teachers during the school year. So it's really making sure all those lanes are covered. But I had a long conversation with Father Chris, who's our pastor, last week, and I just said, you know, what do we do? And he just said, you know what? We keep doing what we do best, and that's educating kids face-to-face. If we can't, then we have that alternative, which is not really a homeschooling model, but it's something very similar to that where the kids are still, it's almost as if they were absent for the day.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a designated teacher that can help them if they need it throughout the day. But then at that point, we rely on our faith in God that if we're doing, you know, what we're doing, everything that we possibly can do to keep our kids safe. And then we're trusting in whatever his plan is for us personally, but our plan as a school, because I think that's the part that scares me the most is the viability of our school with all the Catholic schools closing. I don't want to compromise who we are and what we do well to be something different, but I also don't want to compromise the future of our school.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have to be open because we do have so many essential workers who need their kids to be in a safe place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so multifaceted, the ripples of this. And as we said earlier, the best place for them, for the kids, for their families, for everybody is to be back in school. And you just, you have to do it. Obviously, there are times when that like in March, where it just, that wasn't possible. We didn't
Correct.
Know where this thing was going. And it's so how has it affected enrollment?
Well, thankfully, right now, it hasn't too much. We're about what we were last year, but we're starting to get those effects of parents who are really, really worried about actually having their kids walk onto campus. And so we have a day where the kids can come and drop off their supplies, and we have it scheduled out over a three-hour period where we have blocks where we're asking them to come in and just letting the parents come and see what the classroom looks like so that they feel comfortable with that. Not only that, but just allowing them to something just happened on my principal meeting and I got distracted by that, but having them come in and see and feel comfortable in the classroom setting or not, you know, knowing what it looks like to walk on campus for the kids. So,
are you hearing from people who are interested in coming because their district is not going to go, is doing distance learning?
Yes.
Yeah.
We do. And it's, you know, there's, you've got your extremes, people who want their kids back, who really don't care about them wearing their masks, even though we will have them wear the masks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the parents who just don't want their kids exposed at all and probably haven't been out of the house since March. But what we can say is we know what we can offer. We can be here for those parents who need it. And we'll keep, you know, working with individual families. It's really hard to know what people need unless they communicate that to me. So,
you know, I have a question about face masks, and I don't know if you have the answer, but You know, I was reading something the other day about, you know, the different face masks that people are using and the different ones that are available. And we're not talking about the N95s that the hospitals use, but everything else that you see. And it's a wide variety. And I was reading this one article said, well, face masks made out of this will protect you from 4 feet. If, you know, face masks made out of this. Well, and there's a wide variation of how far droplets can travel and all that, depending on what it's made out of. Are there standards that anybody is putting out for schools about, I mean, presumably you're not providing the face masks.
No. We CAPSO, which is a advocacy group for private schools, has procured some for us that we have in supply in case the kids forget theirs.
Sure.
Or, you know, we're asking parents to supply them. We want their mouth and nose covered. But again, we're keeping the kids in the same cohort so that the germs, you know, any germs that are in the air are being contained within that room. And we're asking families to be as safe as they can. Nobody wants to get sick. So
that's right.
For the same reason, you don't want your family sick. You don't want another family sick. So if you're coming to school, you are practicing safe practices at home. And like I said, we're taking the temperatures of the kids before they come in. We're taking a second temperature before recess in the event that the kids, you know, may have been medicated or something to suppress a fever. We're not. It's not that we don't trust them. We want to take every safety precaution. So
have county health or whoever provides this information, have they provided anything about the air itself, about circulation, air conditioning, open windows, things like that?
So we've talked about that, and we have two rooms in our classroom. We don't have any windows that open. And I have had parents that have asked us about ventilation because they're concerned about not the germs in the air, but they're concerned about the chemicals that we're using. And so we're not using any chemicals different than what we've used in the past. They're all safe and approved for classroom use. And so we're just going to be cleaning more often. And so in order to keep that ventilation, we're opening up one of those rooms, one of those doors to the rooms to make sure that we're getting airflow in the classroom.
Very good. Very good. Well, so can you give us a typical, it's first day of school, I'm bringing my third grader to school. The sort of the protocol that would be happening.
And that's all I've been thinking about for the last 3 months, probably.
I'll bet.
So what happens is we have two drop-off points at school, and typically parents would park in the parking lot and some would walk their kids in. We have a facilities manager and myself that stand at the gate, and we watch who walks in. That has completely changed.
Right.
We now have one drop-off point. Instead of kids opening the doors for drop-off for the kids' drop-offs, for the cars, we now have the adults, staff members who would have been, like, say, on recess duty in the morning, who are now going to be opening the doors, getting the kids out. It's right in front of our front gate, so the kids will drop off and walk in the gate themselves to the classroom. They stand distanced at the door, have their temperature taken before they come in, and then we have two washing stations, one outside, which is a kind of like a camping wash station, and then one on the inside. We have a classroom sink. And so probably in the morning, because they'll be coming in slowly, they will use the one on the inside. And then good practice for teachers is to have some type of seat work for kids to do when they come in. So they're working independently until the school day starts. So the kids will have that seat work that they will be doing. The desks will be completely clean because they get thoroughly cleaned the night before. Right now, our parish has been so gracious in not having CFS, having the kids use our classrooms. It's going to be, for 1 year, a distance learning opportunity so that we know that we're keeping contained our student population within the classrooms. So then the school day will happen, and the kids will do their normal work day. in masks, as I said before, in their own seats with their own things, but being taught, I hate to say this, kind of like old school Catholic way, where you see the kids in rows, you know, at their individual desks, right? It's going to look a lot like that. I'm not saying that that's something that I feel completely proud of, but it's the safest thing for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will go to recess in their own designated areas, so they stay by class, and return to the classroom again, wash their hands, come in, and then do the same learning experience until lunchtime, when they will clean their desks, get their lunches out of their knapsacks, which are on their chairs, eat their lunch, and then go out to their designated spaces for recess, come back in, wash their hands, finish out the day. But we still will have, our kids have enrichment opportunities in music, in technology, and in PE. So, you know, they'll still wear their PE clothes on their PE days, and when it's PE time, they will go back out. The PE coaches are able to use a big space. We have a nice large gym so that the kids can distance and do their PE. Again, coming in, washing their hands, entering back into the classroom. Our music teacher is being very creative. We spent some time talking about this today. He's going to be teaching theory and music appreciation more than anything else, so that the kids aren't singing, but they still have that opportunity to learn the notes on the staff, the types of notes, the value of the notes. And so it's almost like they're learning another language very, very specifically. And then of course the technology that is incorporated into the classroom. And so, we're hoping that it looks as normal as possible. But with caution, you know, practicing the hygiene, practicing the distance when we can, using the masks when we can't, and making sure that the kids have their own individual tools. We know, at the start that we're going to be doing a lot of training with, every student has their own individual Chromebook. We're going to be doing a lot of training with what that looks like if we have to go into quarantine distance learning for all of our classes, and then what that hygiene, those hygiene lessons look like.
So on the in the morning drop off, do you have to stagger that somehow, because it's obviously it's going to be a little bit more time consuming?
We extended. Usually drop off is 15 minutes. We extended it to 20. I think with parents opening the doors for kids, it will go a lot faster than kids opening the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked that parents situate the kids on the right-hand side of the car,
right.
If that helps.
Yeah.
But we know what used to jam up our lines was the crosswalk, the people walking in, which we won't have anymore. And so we're hoping, you know, we have five teachers out there, open the door, get five out, those five cars in. I think it's in my head, I see it moving quite quickly.
That sounds like it, yeah.
I think once we get started with it, we're going to see that it moves quite quickly.
So,
and the pickup's going to look a little different, because the kids will go out to the curb, and instead of the parents standing in the parking lot waiting for the kids to come, they will drive by, basically, and pick up their kids by class as they drive through the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, the thing that we're going to have to work on is what happens in inclement weather. We haven't crossed that bridge yet. But right now, with the what we have in place, I think it looks pretty good.
Well, God has a severe drought planned for us, so
good.
That won't be a problem.
I don't want a severe drought. But
it's crazy. So, people who live nearby, no kid's going to walk to school or ride a bike to school?
No. Yeah. I've asked them if that is their, like, so if they typically walk their kids to school, I'm asking them, you know, can you just drive them and drop them off?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't walk individually. Some kids do bike, and I've asked those parents to contact me so that we can work out that for them,
mm-hmm.
but there's so few that I feel like I need to just have that communication with them.
Yeah.
The big thing that's going to change for us is we did have a group of kids. There's a health club that's close by, and the parents who have memberships would allow their kids to go to the club after school, and we would walk them and drop them at the door, which we will no longer do because
mm-hmm.
it's very much against everything that we're trying to do.
Plus, the health clubs are now closed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Well, you've covered all the seeming contingencies, and
I don't know.
Yeah, that's got to be one of your big things that keeps you up at night. Is what have we missed?
But I do think that that God has been a guiding force in all of this.
Yep.
You know, just the little details of things, some of the things that we did without even knowing why we did it. I mean, obviously it was good practice, but it has proven to be something that we've needed. We moved our kindergartners to a larger room, and that room was plumbed for a bathroom. So now our kindergartners are contained within a room.
Oh, that's great.
Bathroom. You know, it's closer to where the drop-off is so that parents could actually see their kids walking to class. They don't have as long a walk to class. So, I don't know. I think God's hand is in all of this, and I have to remember to keep seeing that and just trusting that you know, he's going to help us through this. I don't know how else to do it because that's the only thing that's keeping me feeling good about what we're doing. And I have to feel good about it or else the families are not going to feel good about it.
Well, my wife and I tell our kids every morning, God's in charge, you know.
Absolutely.
This is the day the Lord has made. Let's rejoice and be glad in it. And if you don't have that belief, I don't know how you put one foot in front of the other.
Well, and I think that's the part that we need to fall back on right now with all the uncertainty. You know, my morning readings, and it keeps bringing it back to that for me. And I can't forget about that. And we sometimes attend Corpus Christi in Lake Tahoe, and Father Francis had these beautiful, you know, it looks like the round white stickers for the back of the car that
right.
pray. And, you know, I put that on my car, and it reminds me every day when I get in the car, hopefully reminds other people, you know, it's all we can do right now.
That is. I hope that out of all this comes a great resurgence in faith in God and trust in God, and that God's in charge and he has a plan for us. And I fervently hope that that's one of the great things that comes out of all this.
I pray for that daily. I do.
Yeah. Well, Marcy, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. I'm so happy our kids are in such great hands. And
well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. We have a great team, and teachers, I told them today, it was so nice to have them here as my support system.
Well,
our
prayers go with you. I'll tell our family our rosary is going to be for you and all those great kids at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And
thank you so much. Oh, that means so much.
And we'll look forward, hopefully, to our paths crossing again soon.
Wonderful. Well, you have a wonderful day, and I'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Marcy.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That's Marcy Green, the principal at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Elk Grove, one of those great principals that we're just so lucky to have in our great Catholic schools. And again, you can call the Catholic Schools Department if you're interested in having your child attend one of the many Catholic elementary schools or Catholic high schools that are throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. So the easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria. Thanks for all you do here for vocations in all this great Diocese of Sacramento. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Jennifer Campbell, who, among many hats, is the director of Camp Pendola, the virtual Camp Pendola. Jen, good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Which hat are you wearing today?
I wear multiple at the same time, but today we can talk a little bit about virtual camp and then some parent night that we have coming up I'd like to share with you.
Very good. Very good. Both are, I think the parent night is very intriguing, but let's start with virtual Camp Pendola, the 60th anniversary, but the first virtual Camp Pendola.
That's right. And we are right in the middle of that week. We're in that first week of it.
Right.
So we are having a blast, and the kids are really connecting with each other and with the staff over, and it's over Zoom, so that can be a challenge, but the kids' personalities are really coming out, and it's been really fun and exciting. I mean, it's not as good as being at camp, but it is a very close second.
So did you have a good sign up?
We had a decent sign up. I mean, it's not great. We had to cancel two of our 4 weeks because of low enrollment on two of them. But you know, we've got a few kids that are still hanging in there that signed up.
Well, it's always the case with the very first time you try something, especially something that presumably isn't going to be in existence next year. Hopefully
right.
You're back in camp. So it's a hard sell.
It's a hard sell. And so I've talked to some of the parents this week, just because, mailing, a parent had to come pick up a box because it got, lost in the mail. But the parents we have talked to have been really appreciative that we're doing, that there is something for their kids because they're at home and they're just bored. Even if when parents are home, they're working. So the kids just need some kind of interaction. And so we're happy to offer it. And the staff have been loving it too. So it's been a good week so far. And then we'll end our week with a campfire. We pre-recorded some of it so that we could have staff singing together, because singing on Zoom is not easy. but we, you know, we've worked out some skits and some things ahead of time, and the staff have rehearsed it on Zoom, so we know what to do. But yeah.
Are you going to have an actual campfire?
Well, actually, yes. Yeah. So the two staff that are the lead for our evening activities, Mr. Cameron and Miss Noemi, they actually both have campfire pits in their backyard,
uh-huh.
You know, the little ones. And so they are going to do it. We will still get to have one of the traditions at camp is we end our week with magic fire,
mm-hmm.
Which is a mystery sprinkling magic fire that I add to the campfire. And so they'll still be able to do that and see all the colors, so we'll have a campfire for them to.
Can you roast a marshmallow when that's going on?
You can in your home, but you cannot once you put magic fire into your campfire.
It doesn't work.
Then it does not work, no. But the campfire is really pretty colors.
Wow. I've never seen magic fire. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you'll have to check it out. I can get you some.
Oh, good.
It's really fun.
We have one of those little fire pits in the backyard.
And a lot of people do. So, you know, we're encouraging families to do that. We're, you know, we've done a movie night, we've done a game night this week with campers, and they're doing an overnight. So they're going to sleep in their backyards.
Great.
Or some of the kids are like, but can we just do a pillow fort? And I was like, that's up to mom and dad. pillow forts count. Because we're challenging them each day with doing an activity. Tuesday of this first week, it just happened to fall on Camp Kindness Day. So we really focused on doing random acts of kindness around your house and for your family. And because we really love the spirit of Camp Kindness Day. It's something that we have been celebrating for the last two summers. I mean, we do it all the time, but there's one specific day where we are really make kids aware of the importance of being kind, and so we've really focused on that with one of our days this week too.
So how do the kids participate?
So we mailed out a box to them that has almost all of the supplies that they need. Some of the things, you know, just kind of household supplies we ask them to collect around their house, like scissors and dish soap, things like that they might need for an activity. And the staff lead the activity over Zoom.
And what do they need? Do they need a kitchen table or
They need some kind of a device, so a Chromebook, an iPad, mm-hmm. whatever, and a flat space to work is usually best. But the kids, one of the days this week, our challenge for the day was to Zoom outside. And so, you know, they were out sitting on their lawn in the backyard, mm-hmm. or one of the kids kept getting into his hammock, and not always the best position to do an activity that you need a flat space, but he made it work because he really wanted to be in his hammock. they just need somewhere just like they would for, just and similarly to they would need for school, but, you know, it's not like school. We're doing more fun activities where there's games. We're mixing in games and arts and crafts and nature activities, and you know, we're mixing in prayer into that too, where and they're doing different types of prayers, so that, and the kids are leading it, the staff are leading the prayers, you know, we're all working together on it.
So what age groups are you working with?
The majority of the kids for this first week, they're, you know, school age. So we have 2nd through 7th graders.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do have our CITs participating, who are juniors and seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're participating as helpers and just being an extra set of eyes in the Zoom calls and talking to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because when you see the kid maybe is distracted or they've turned off their video, just like having an extra set of eyes to be like, hey, are you okay? Did you need help? Or are you okay?
Right.
Like, what's going on? Turn your video back on so we can see your smiley face and that kind of stuff.
Hmm. So, any glitches?
So far, we've been okay. Just, you know, there's connectivity issues where sometimes the kids are kind of getting bounced out with their Wi-Fi isn't
right.
As strong. But that's true with any of us anytime, you know. So it's a quick fix and just reset it and hop back in. And otherwise, not really, no. I mean, luckily, we mailed out all the boxes, and only one parent didn't receive theirs. So I took that as a blessing because, you know, you just never know with mail. So, but yeah, they all got their boxes with all their stuff in it, and we're really excited to like just open those boxes and see what was in them. And yeah, they've been showing off all the stuff all week because we did send them some swag items. They got a sticker, and each week it's different. Some sunglasses and T-shirts. We did vintage shirts. We didn't order a shirt specific for this year, so we ordered. We have shirts from previous years, so everyone got a T-shirt from a time when a lot of these kids weren't, because they're older shirts too. So it's older and some of our more recent shirts, but it's shirts that they wouldn't have because they wouldn't have been coming to camp yet, which is kind of fun too.
So you have a morning, afternoon, and an evening session?
Yeah, so we do a morning session from 9 to 11, an afternoon from 3 to 5, which ends with our evening prayer. And then we have a night session. So tonight, or Wednesday night is the only night we don't do a night session, because that's the night that they're challenged to sleep outside.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we did a night session with a game. We did a movie night.
What time is your night session?
7.
7, okay. 7 and
9. 8:30.
Yeah, 8:30, okay. So yeah. What's left coming up?
So then the next one we have will be on July 26th, and that's going to be our Mission Possible theme.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our Spy Week theme. We have the kits include like decoder circles. They have to, you know, can write secret messages and all that kind of fun stuff because we're spies for the week.
That's always, I mean, that's one from regular camp, right?
That is a new one. We were really excited to try this year. So it's one that actually, yeah, it really was popular. So we got to keep it. And then this week's fun in the sun, which is also, it is a week from camp. So really taking those activities that we would have done at camp and adapting them has been a challenge, but a good challenge because it makes you think of them in a different and new way, which is good for kids too.
So, and then that will be it?
That will be it. Yeah, just the 2 weeks.
Very good. And then you're hopefully by next summer.
Yeah.
Back on the beam.
Yeah. Back next summer. That's our goal. That's the post we're running towards. So, we'll be back at the camp next summer with full camp. Kind of looking at new ways to reach out to campers and possibly do some more family camps like we've done in the past. Where, you know, the goal is to get people up to camp. So however we can make that a reality is what we're going to be trying to do next summer. This has been kind of a way for us to do a good restart. So we're taking that to heart as we move forward.
Have you commiserated with other camp directors around the country? Are there any camps going on, like, in person?
There are. So I think the last statistic I saw said 60% of camps did not run this summer.
Uh-huh.
So there are 40% of camps that are running. I'm not in contact with all the ones that are running, but I know some are running. It just depends on your state and what the guidelines that came out for your state. We chose not to run. There are some that have kind of, if their camp site is closer to a large city, they're able to run like a day camp.
A day camp, yeah.
But I'm, you know, we're not close enough to be able to do that at our location. So it would have been a challenge for us to do that situation. So I think a lot of us are in the same boat and kind of realizing that we just, you know, we're just preparing for next year. I was talking to one of my camp director friends who he was saying that he feels like he's been busier this summer without camp running than he has ever been when camp is running, because we're trying so many different ways to keep connected with our camp families, and we don't have the luxury of them coming to us.
Yeah, you're reinventing the wheel this year.
You are, yeah. And so it's exciting and it's challenging, and we're just all doing our best, you know?
Yeah, and you probably, if you were up at Real Camp Pendola, it'd have been a tough sell this summer.
I mean, I think so. I think that there are families that, you know, really wanted their kid to get out of town and yeah. be able to be out in the nature. And then there's other families that are just nervous. I mean, it's the same thing with, like, schools going back
sure.
to session. So
sure.
it's the same, you know, same kind of situations. And so I think for the health and safety of our campers and our staff, like, this was the best decision that we could make.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you deserve many, many medals for giving it a go. You know, I mean, that was,
yeah.
That was a real, bold decision to make and say, we're going to soldier on. We're going to do this thing. And for those that are doing it, it sounds like they're having a great experience.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And they're going to share that information with others and, you know, and that'll be good for the future. And, because the community that's being formed is still the community. Like, that's part of our mission statement, is that we're forming community with these kids and helping them form community with each other. And so we're still able to do that virtually, which that will then, they'll be excited to next year get to come with each other to camp and, like, see each other in person. So at least that's our hope.
We're talking with Jennifer Campbell, or is this the virtual Jennifer Campbell?
I'm real.
You're real.
I'm real.
You have to check. I am not a robot.
Yes.
Yeah. So, parent support.
Yeah.
We're not talking about camp anymore.
No, we're not. Well, this one, we kind of connected it back to camp, but it's something that we started in the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry kind of at the beginning of the shelter-in-place orders, the stay-at-home orders, a parent support night. So we do them once a month. We've done... This will be our fourth one this month in July. They're on the third Mondays of the month. And they're a way to connect with parents and for parents to get some information how to support their kids. Most, you know, we're really focusing on, like, teenager and young adult-aged kids. And so this month we have Jeff Hogan, who is the director of Camp Gray, which is in the Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
And so I met him through I actually visited his camp for a camp summit Catholic camp summit that we had a few years ago. And he has just been a great support to me. And I have been watching, he's been doing some inspirational videos that he's posting through his Instagram at Camp Gray. And I just thought he would be a great speaker to have to help families, you know, encourage their kids to appreciate the creation all around them and finding God in that and seeing how to make those connections with our young people. Right now is a great opportunity for families to go hiking, and we just need to help everyone remember the leave no trace philosophy of when you do go up to these lakes and these remote areas, whatever you bring in, you hike out. And so that's what he's going to be speaking to, is, like, how to help families connect in that way. And I'm really excited for him to be doing this. It'll be a different a way to talk to your kids and reach out to them. So.
And this will be taking place on the 20th?
The 20th.
That's Monday at 8 p.m.?
8 p.m. on YouTube. It'll be live on YouTube. So I think... right now, it'll be myself and possibly Deacon Kevin and Jeff, and it'll be Jeff will present a little bit, and then it'll be a conversation where we'll ask for families who are watching to submit questions mm-hmm. to us via the YouTube channel.
And so if you go to scd.org/parent support,
mm-hmm.
you can
you'll be able to see it.
And, wow, it sounds very interesting.
I think it will be. I mean, I've been loving what I've been seeing that they're doing at Camp Gray, finding ways to connect with their families. And so, and I've just found him to be someone who has been very inspiring to me. Not just his like excitement about camp and his love of his camp, but just his love of God and how he expresses that through his ministry as a camp director. So.
Boy, that's great. So is Camp Gray an actual, is it like a Camp Pendola?
It is. It is very much, it is very much like a Camp Pendola, and it is named after the priest who first started it.
Oh, wow.
Father Gray, or Monsignor Gray.
And it's within the Diocese of Madison?
Yes, yeah. And it's if you can actually Google it, but it's just Camp Gray, and it's just a beautiful camp. It's a beautiful camp location, but they have very similar traditions to ours, and very similar setup as ours is. They're just in Wisconsin.
The whole state of Wisconsin's beautiful, so
yeah,
it'd be hard to have a camp there that wasn't gorgeous.
That's what I was thinking too, yeah. But.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for congratulations on Camp Pendola and on this. I'll be sure to tune in on Monday night at 8 o'clock to hear all about Camp Gray.
Great, thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks, Jennifer. God bless. That's Jennifer Campbell, the director of Camp Pendola, and really give her a lot of credit for soldiering on. And you just could have thrown your hands up in the air and said, "No, we're not going to do camp." We can't do it with the pandemic, and by golly, they put together a great virtual program, and you can still sign up for session 3, which will be July 20. This will be the final session, actually, because they canceled two of them, but July 26th to the 31st, Mission Possible. Go to pendola.org, pendola.org. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Hi, I'm John McGinnis, retired sheriff of Sacramento County, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit.